This is the Medic Cast, April 26th, 2010.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters!
This is the Medic Cast, a podcast for EMS providers by EMS providers, featuring EMS news, products, tips, tricks, and commentary. So grab your gear and glove up! Here's today's show with the Podmedic, Jamie Davis!
Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of the Medic Cast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Podmedic, and I'd like to welcome everybody to the show this week. We have a great show coming up, including just a basic review of some of our basic medications. Now, today we're going to be looking at epinephrine, both BLS auto-injector epinephrine, and we're also going to talk a little bit about the ALS versions of epinephrine, and how we use those drugs and what they do and how they affect our patients. So look forward to that later on in the show after our news segment. If you want to zip right through to it, you can always fast forward. So keep that in mind. I saw a couple of reviews over at the iTunes store, and one of the complaints that seemed to crop up most often was that I take too long to get to the tip of the week. Well, the tip of the week is part of the end of the show. The second half of the show, the first half of the show is, of course, our user listener mail, responding back to some of the comments, our voicemail items, and of course the news segment, which I think is a very important part of the show. And so if you're listening to this, hoping to find out more about epinephrine, just fast forward, folks. It's pretty much that simple. If you want to find out more information, find additional links on any of the things talked about in this or any other episode, of course, that resource for you is available online at mediccast.com/blog, and you'll find all of the information discussed in this show and every other one right there. At the top of the page, you'll see a link for show notes. Just click that link, and you'll see the most recent episode listed first, and you can scroll down and look into past episodes as well. And you can listen to the show on each of those pages. You can also check out links for news items, articles, and of course follow-up links, because I always try to give you two or three follow-up links for any of the tip of the week segments. So, you know, my short little 10-15 minute tip segment, you can go more in depth and find additional information and really dig into the topic if you need to understand it deeper. And that's that option that you always will have here at the Medic Cast. If you want to get a hold of me, you can always leave, first of all, a comment on any of the articles and show notes links over at the site. The top and the bottom of every page, there's a way to just click on a comment link and go ahead and leave that comment. You can also just send me an email. podmedic@mac.com is that email address. And of course, the voicemail line is always available for you. 941-306-3342, 941-30-MEDIC. And just call in on that voicemail line and leave a message. We actually have a voicemail coming up later today from good friend Tim, listener Tim, who's been with us forever. I think he's probably listened to the show since one of the very earliest episodes, if not the first episode of the Medic Cast. In fact, let's go on into that segment right now. Tim was checking in recently on a news article I discussed concerning some members of the Louisiana Fire Services asking the state government to basically excuse them from medical oversight and continuing education requirements for their EMS service patches and their EMS certifications. And I thought that was a bad idea, and let's see what Tim had to say.
Morning, Jamie, paramedic Tim Toad. Listening to episode 213, as always, fantastic. Thanks for the info. I have a comment to add on these Louisiana firefighters with this medical oversight review. While I have to agree with you, sir, very, very scary. I guess the question I would want to pose to the state of Louisiana is, how did these firefighters gain their initial certification, and what makes them think they would be exempt? I think you hit the nail right on the head. We all have to stay current. We all have to maintain. We all have to stay abreast of change. And I have to say, I agree with you. If they don't want to change, so be it. I'm providing EMS, and let the professionals who do that provide EMS. Want to be a career firefighter? Be a career firefighter. Okay, that's my two cents. As always, great show, sir. Thanks for the info.
Hey, Tim. Thanks for calling in and giving your opinion on that follow-up. And, you know, I have to agree, it kind of brings back to me the thought process of, did they not learn additional new ways to fight fire and deal with structural problems and all the other things they have to do as a firefighter? It seems to me kind of odd that they just decided they don't want to move forward in learning how to continue to save lives. Maybe they should go back to horse-drawn pump wagons, maybe just use axes instead of chainsaws to ventilate roofs. I think that this is just kind of an odd argument and that they put forward, and I agree with you too, Tim. So great, thanks for calling in, and always great to hear from you. I know you send me a lot of emails and other things, and Tim, thanks for being a great supporter of the MedicCast. Let's move on into some listener email. I got an email from listener Justin checking in to let me know that he has been thinking about moving into the nursing career path, as I did, and wanted to know if I had any thoughts about some of the online RN bridge programs, paramedic to RN bridge programs that are out there offered by a variety of resources. One he was looking at was college-net. And so I was looking at the CollegeNet program and some other things. He's in a very rural part of Maine and is not sure he'd be able to really get to a local college. Local is not really close enough to be feasible for him. And the online option would work a lot better. And I'll give him the option. I get the answer that I give a lot of people. I get this question quite a bit. And I wish there was a better answer. But a lot of online paramedic to RN bridge programs are not being recognized right now by state nursing boards. Now, this is not something that is routinely disallowed, but you need to check with your state's nursing board. Every state has one, and that is the accrediting body for getting an RN in that state. So when you are looking at getting into a program that is a paramedic to RN bridge program, you need to really check in with your state nursing board and get an answer from them. They should have a list of accredited programs that they will accept nursing degrees from. You're going to get basically an associate's degree in nursing, and you're going to still have to take your national boards, your NCLEX exam. Once you get your RN in whatever state in which you live, that RN and NCLEX should be transferable to any state licensure within the United States. It's one of the advantages of the RN system and something we should learn in EMS. But you need to figure out if your state will allow a given program to operate. You might want to talk to your state and find out if any of the in-state programs are offering RN, paramedic to RN bridge programs. I know in the state of Maryland, there's a couple of colleges that are offering a current paramedic to RN bridge program. And so that would be something you might want to check within your state. Maybe they offer one. You know, when you Google something online, you're going to get the people that are trying to sell their product first. And so medicine, the CollegeNet program, Phoenix University, these are all for-profit educational institutions, and they are accredited for the things that they do in most respects, but you do need to make sure that they apply for what you're doing. And of course, they're paying for advertising. They're paying to rise to the top of the search engines. You might want to check within your state. You know, there might be an online or distance learning program through a community college in the state of Maine, and you should probably find out if that's an option. Go through your local community college or call the University of Maine or some other resource and see if they can point you in the right direction. Speaking of paramedics and nursing, I wanted to give a shout out to my friend Rick Rosati. He checked in with me this week. He's getting swamped as he rolls into the end of his semester with his nursing program. Rick's a retired fire officer in the Rochester, New York area, a longtime paramedic and moving into a nursing degree. He is in the nursing program, I think at Monroe Community College, but I could be wrong. But Rick just checked in, let me know how he's doing. And I just wanted to give a shout out to Rick and stay strong, brother. You can do it. And I always look forward to listening to your show. And of course, that show is the Mitigation Journal, MITIGA TION, Mitigation Journal. And that program is another great podcast looking at specifically preparedness issues with the emergency services sector, whether you're in EMS, firefighting, public health, hospital sector, whatever. And I think he does a good job of talking about some of the current issues in the being prepared. And of course, Rick and I also collaborate on some of the materials over at the Medicast Extra EMS Study Aid site as well. And so you can find a lot of good stuff from Rick in that sector as well. Finally, our last piece of listener email that I'm going to pull out of the box this week is from Hans in Australia. Hans is checking in. He wants to know about whether he can transfer his paramedic certificate or degree from Australia to the U.S. and how he would go about doing that. And I unfortunately don't have a straight answer for him, so I'm going to throw this out to the listener base because every state and jurisdiction is completely different. So I want to find out. He's looking to maybe look at moving to Florida, New Jersey, or the Maryland area. I got Maryland covered. I've got to call into my local state EMS board to find out exactly what they can do for this will they allow a degree to transfer in? But we need to check with these other states. So if you know about how a person from out of the country with some kind of a paramedic certificate or degree, do they have to take the whole national registry program again? Can they challenge some or all of a college program in order to go take the test in your area? Can you find out and let me know? And again, seems like he's looking in Florida and New Jersey as well as Maryland, and I'm still working on getting an answer from the state of Maryland for my end. So you can send those responses back to me, podmedic@mac.com, or better yet, why don't you call in on the voicemail line just like Tim did? 941-306-3342, 941-30-MEDIC. Call in if you have an answer to that, and we can share them with Hans in the next episode here at the Medicast. Time to jump on in and take a look at this week's news. And I'm going to jump in with our first item, looking at a recent cardiac arrest save at the Boston Marathon. I don't know if any of you have seen this story, but it's pretty exciting. It's just from a few days ago when I'm recording this, and I just wanted to see if you all had seen this. This is the kind of big story that talks about some of the hot-button issues I push here on the Medicast, and that is training people in bystander CPR, rapid and ready access to defibrillation, either from the public sector, or in this case, there were EMS services on scene at the scene of the Boston Marathon for both the runners and for the crowds that were watching the marathon. And this guy apparently collapsed, a 64-year-old man, just before he got to the end. He was 2 miles from finishing the marathon, and he fell out. The spectators ran over and started to attend to him, figured out he was in cardiac arrest, and began CPR on the gentleman. Meanwhile, they had roving paramedics on bicycles who were rapidly brought into the scene and a nearby ambulance dispatched. And by the time they got there, they were able to get a defibrillator on him and shock him and get him back. He was listed in stable condition after falling out. And, you know, this guy was probably in pretty good shape. He had a sudden cardiac arrest, maybe related to an electrolyte imbalance. So they shocked him. They got some fluids in him. They got him back up and running, and obviously not up and running in the marathon, but up and heart running again. And it's just a good way to talk about why this is so very important, because this guy is alive today because bystanders saw him and were able to immediately begin care with basic CPR skills. And I think that that just points to how important this is to get this skill out into our community and work hard to make sure as many people as possible are educated in CPR. You know, why can't we set a goal to say that 50% of our adult population are going to know how to do CPR in the next 5 years? And what can you do to get that initiative through in your community? Let's jump on into our next story. And this next item is looking at an article I found over in coming out of the UK. And it's a story about them implementing new computer systems into some of their ambulances and how this is really saving them a significant amount of time because they can get patient data into the hospital system directly from the ambulance. Now, this kind of integrated system is something that I've just really been excited about for a long time, hoping that we'll get more of more things like this here in the U.S. Ultimately, we should be connected to some kind of a network where we can pull up patient information. If we can get some basic patient information on the scene, we can pull up some medical record information on that patient directly and be able to check and see what's going on with this person. Maybe we don't have somebody there to give us a full history, but we can see that they have a cardiac history or a diabetic history or an allergic reaction history, and we can better be prepared to treat what's going on with that patient. Not only that, but because we're linked into that system, we pull that data and automatically populate certain fields within our patient care reports. And when we go to put them out, we can pretty much type in some basic information right as we're treating the patient or have somebody or do it right after we get to the hospital and hit a button, and all that information is instantly transferred to the hospital system, to our station house, maybe printed out so we can review and sign it, and then goes into our whatever master system might be. And I think that this is really something that I would like to see more of here in the U.S. You know, there's this huge privacy concern here in the U.S. about, oh, I don't want my medical records floating out there for anyone to grab. Well, you know, you say that until you need somebody to know that you have some specific type of medical history. Certainly, we could give people the opportunity to opt out, but we're protecting their medical information through the HIPAA guidelines we already use, and this would be covered under that system. You wouldn't be able to access it from anywhere. It would be securely accessed simply from the ambulance using a closed system, and that system would only work within the ambulance and within the hospital system and nowhere else. And I think that that's something that we could do and protect and make it so that we can get back out on the street and to do the job we need to do rather than spending a lot of time doing additional paperwork and additional steps associated with that paperwork. Finally, another story out of Boston. Must be Boston week here on the MedicCast. This has to do with an article I found over at medicinenet.com, and it has to do with a study conducted in Boston between 2001 and 2006, looking at children treated for food allergies in the emergency departments there. And these 1,200 children were treated, and they were looking at how much epinephrine did it take to break through the allergic reaction they had, or based on what kind of treatment they got in the field, how many doses of EpiPen did it take, and how many EpiPen prescriptions did these kids have. And what this article found, or what this study found, was that there may be a need for children, and I would extrapolate also adults, to have a prescription where they have two EpiPens on hand at all times. That one dose isn't going to do it, and they should be prepared to administer or have someone else administer a second Epi dose when necessary if the allergic reaction is not broken by the first dose of Epi. And this is something we should consider. If you're a BLS provider and you either, if you have EpiPens on your units, as we do in Maryland for use by BLS providers, of course you can administer those and you can call and consult for additional doses of epinephrine via EpiPen. But if the patient has already taken a dose, what do you do? Well, you can give them another dose. You might need a consult to do that, but we should think about these things ahead of time. And that's why I point out articles like this. It's really a good idea to know what the research out there is looking at. And this is not something that you should change your protocol without going and getting the actual protocol changed first. You shouldn't unilaterally do these kind of things, but you should keep in your mind that my patient might need another dose of Epi. And if that's the case, whether you're an ALS or a BLS provider, if that's the case, you should keep that in the back of your mind. And if you need to get a medical approval to do that, the time to get that approval is not when the patient is crashing. The time to do that is when you're making any initial contact. So if you've given them an Epi dose or they just took one themselves just before you arrived, you should get medical control on the horn immediately and get an approval for a follow-up dose if they continue to suffer severe distress or if they get worse. And this is something that we should keep in mind and put out there for the physicians to give us the information we need. You know, you give them the consult information and you request permission to administer further dose as necessary and let them make the call. But based on this article, it looks like it might be something that will be needed in some of our patients. It's time for the tip of the week this week, and based on that last news article on EpiPens, I'm going to bring back something. We haven't talked about epinephrine or EpiPens here on the MedicCast for over 2 years. What's up with that? So I thought I would bring back some of our med segments for our basic medications over the coming weeks and months and kind of get that review process in there again. So I thought I would lead off that segment with a look at the BLS epinephrine auto-injector. What are the specific medication indications, contraindications, side effects, all that stuff about this particular med? We're not going to talk about the administration portion of it. That's been done before, but we will talk about the medication itself in this segment. The indications for using an epinephrine auto-injector are basically a moderate to severe allergic reaction with respiratory distress, anaphylactic shock, basically that severe allergic reaction where someone has extreme hypotension along with severe respiratory distress. And so you'll see this in patients. And as BLS providers, using this auto-injector is going to be a key way that you can sustain this person prior to getting them to the hospital. You may use this auto-injector, the epinephrine auto-injector or EpiPen, with mild allergic reactions when you know that the person has a history of life-threatening allergic reaction. And it's important to remember when taking that history, doing that sample history with patients that have any kind of medical problem, a good question to always ask them is, what happened the last time this happened to you? And so you might find out that, oh, the last time I had to be intubated and I nearly died and I'm really worried about this. And of course, the person's in a mild allergic reaction, but they've called 911 anticipating that problem. You need to ask the question because you may now say, okay, I might need to give them the auto injector ahead of time, prophylactically, just in case. And if you check your protocols, you might have to actually check with medical control first prior to administering that auto injector. But you should keep that in the back of your mind that it's something that you should be doing for even a mild reaction when somebody has a history of severe reaction. Anyone with severe asthma, and this may more often be the case with children, but you should keep this in mind if the person's not responding to albuterol treatments, Combivents, or whatever else you're doing, they may need an epinephrine auto-injector. So if you've assisted them with their inhaler, for instance, and you've given them the doses you can give them and they're getting worse, it may be indicated to move forward and treat their asthma with an epinephrine dose. Contraindications. If they have the presence of severe allergic reaction, anaphylaxis, there are no contraindications. In asthma patients, again, if you're using this as a second-line treatment when nothing else has worked, there will not be any contraindications. But you should be aware of precautions and side effects. Side effects for the epinephrine dosing include tachycardia, palpitations, angina. And again, this is something to keep in mind. This medication is going to have a broad effect on the body. We're trying to, in the case of allergic reactions and asthma attacks, we're trying to dilate the bronchial passages. We're trying to relax that smooth muscle in the respiratory tract. But we do need to remember that epinephrine has effects on the cardiac and vascular systems as well. And so we're going to have an increased heart rate. We're going to have increased load on the heart. And also peripherally, we're going to have tightening of the blood vessels. And these are all going to have effects. We may be giving this to a patient that has a cardiac history. And if they do, we could save them from the allergic reaction only to put them into an MI. So we need to keep that in mind and monitor them carefully. Patients may get a headache, experience nausea, vomiting, dizziness, and this is related probably to the cardiac symptoms, but we do need to keep that in mind. We may see signs of hypertension. In fact, we should see signs of hypertension. Their blood pressure is going to go up based on this treatment. They'll have nervousness and anxiety, and we may actually see muscle tremors. So be aware these side effects are out there and keep them in the back of your mind with relation to the patient's other medical history. What about precautions? Well, people who are pregnant, people with a cardiac history, as I said before, and people with non-severe asthma conditions, we should probably be shying away from this as a line of treatment. Now, in cases of life-threatening anaphylaxis, this patient is, you know, their airway is disappearing. They're not able to manage their airway. They have signs of severe shock onset. I mean, we have basically hypoperfusion because of this problem, because they're either hypoxemic or other issues associated with their reaction. We are going to have to go ahead and maybe give these to patients with these other histories. But understand that epinephrine could cause a pregnant person to go into preterm labor. So we don't want to give it to a pregnant person with a mild reaction without consulting first, even if they have a history of life-threatening reaction, just because we want to make sure that we're not endangering the life of the fetus and bringing them into this world before they're ready. And so we need to really weigh the costs of everything. This is not going to be an easy decision. Use that radio and get online medical control involved. Also, don't forget that our dose and preparation is basically in the auto injector, but you should be aware of what that dose is. There used to be called the adult and pediatric dose. Most agencies that I know of have shied away from that simply because the pediatric dose is so small that it really only works for very small children. So usually now the adult dose is considered, depending on your location and your protocols, anyone over the age of maybe even 2 or 3, that young. Because once they get to a certain size, the adult dose really is the only dose that's going to fix things for them. So the adult auto-injector, and this is ages 3 and up, is 0.3 milligrams of 1 to 1,000 epinephrine administered IM. So we're going to put that into the large muscle in the thigh. We're not going to be talking about how to do that right here, but we're talking about the medication itself. And again, that's for, let's just say on average, patients 3 years or older. The pediatric auto-injector is 0.15 milligrams of epinephrine 1 to 1,000 administered, again, IM. And again, it's easy to remember that the adults is twice the pediatric dose. So if the adults are 0.3, the pediatric dose is 0.15. And again, that's for patients under the age of 3. And consider additional doses. There have been some studies out recently looking at the fact that children, especially who have a life-threatening allergic reaction, needed more than one dose of epinephrine to get them through this, and was recommending that doctors prescribe 2 auto-injectors for these patients per expected treatment, so that they should always have 2 on hand. So keep that in mind. If you've given one dose, whether it's to a child or an adult, be prepared that you might have to give another one. And if they've needed that additional dose because of your checking on their past history, you might want to call and get the consult permission to do that ahead of time. Some of the brand names you might see Epi Easy Pen, or the EpiPen is a brand name. So that's why we always say epinephrine auto-injector, and rather than just say EpiPen, which is what we all say in class anyway. But you should know that there are different brand names. Again, it should have the preparation and dosing and stuff on the side. So if you're not sure if the auto-injector is the right one, read the label. And of course, don't forget to do your 5 R's, making sure that the liquid inside is clear, not cloudy, and doesn't have any floating particulates in it, if you can see through the window and see that's going on, depending on the injector brand. So that's a look at the BLS EpiPen, the auto injector for epinephrine and available for BLS use and for patient use. And it should be something you should review even as an ALS provider from time to time. So we'll hit the ALS version of epinephrine in a future episode coming up here very soon. And in the meantime, I urge you to always take some time every now and then, just review your protocols, go through your meds periodically, look at the ones that you don't use very often, but you know what? Review the ones you use all the time too. Sometimes there's some little things in there, different wordings of protocols that you might be missing in the administration of medications and the way you're treating your patients in the field. And the only way to fix that is to read and review your protocols on a regular basis. There are some great links on epinephrine in the show notes for this episode. I urge you to check them out. There's one, just a link on the Epi AutoPen, and also to look at specifically anaphylaxis and severe allergic reaction. So you can review some of the signs and symptoms associated with that particular illness. It's important for you to be able to distinguish one from the other. And again, I can't stress enough, you need to be able to take a really good history, either from the patient themselves or from family members if the patient's respiratory distress is not allowing you to get more than one or two word answers. But one thing you can always ask, even, you know, if you can just get a head nod, is to say, hey, you're having a mild reaction now. Is this something that you've had a really bad problem with before? And what happened, you know, the last time? Did you get intubated the last time? Were you in the hospital for an extended period of time? And these are questions that you should always be asking with a lot of different things, such as any respiratory issue, cardiac problems, things like that. You can always ask that question and get an idea of what to expect. You know, wouldn't life be a lot easier if we had a crystal ball and could see into the future? Sometimes with patients who have prior medical history, you can do that, and it will help you plan your treatment options a whole lot better. And don't forget that you always should be keeping in the back of your mind that you might need to administer more than one dose of this medication and be prepared to consult if necessary based on your protocols. And that's going to wrap up this episode of the MedicCast. I want to thank everybody for checking out the show this week. If you haven't already done so, make sure you take some time this week. Head over and check out MedicCast.com/blog. That's the MedicCast blog. You can get there from the front page, MedicCast.com too. But you should get over there and check out the articles and other things that are posted throughout the course of the week. Leave a comment. Check out the links in the show notes, the news item links, and everything else, and really become a member of the community. Participate in a broader way in what goes on here with the MedicCast. Of course, you can always get a hold of us by email. Send me those emails in to podmedic@mac.com. I try to respond to every email I get. So it might take me a couple of days, but I will get back to you. Stand by. And if you don't hear from me after a week or so, send me another email. Maybe it got lost in the shuffle. Sometimes that happens. Don't forget to also use the voicemail line, just like Tim did in this episode earlier on, 941-306-3342, 941-30-MEDIC is the way you can call in here. Put that in your phone and save it. And when you're listening to a show and you're not at home and you're not near the computer and you can't leave a comment another way, go ahead and call in on that voicemail line. Most people have unlimited calling or some kind of amazing number of calls on their cell phones anyway. So just take a few minutes, call in, leave a message, leave a space at the end, and then drop me your email information so I can email you if I need to. Don't worry, I'll chop it off before I put it in the show. That's going to be it. Just don't forget, you can find MedicCast over at Facebook, facebook.com/MedicCast, and you can find me personally on Twitter and Facebook under the handle PodMedic. So go ahead and find me over there. Friend me up, follow me, fan me, whatever the case may be. I love to hear from all of you, no matter how you'd like to contact me, and definitely keep in touch with me via the social media routes. Show's kind of short and sweet this week, and I think we like it that way. Last week's MedicCast Live was great, but ran a little long, so I'll keep it short this week. Let's wrap with a song by Natalie Gelman. This is her tune, Never Had You. If you haven't listened to this one before, it's a great song, and I would urge you to head over and check out her music. There's a link in the show notes, and of course, there's also a button there. You can just go ahead and click and pick up her music in iTunes. You know, spend 99 cents, $1.29, whatever the song is. Support her. It's, you know, the cost of a soda, folks. Show support for these independent artists. They're making their music available to us, and it's not going out on the radio, so we're the one way to spread the word about this great music. That's it for me. I'm Jamie Davis, the PodMedic. I'll be back again next week, Sunday night, early Monday morning, with another episode of the MedicCast showing up in your mailbox. In the meantime, don't forget, scene safety and BSI. She's got hair of gold, a bright smile, so she's been told. You can find her every night, crying yourself to sleep. Quiet on the edge of my curls, I walk out shieldless and through the rain. I just wanna be